Call to order this meeting of the State and Local Government Operations and Oversight Committee for Monday, February 2nd, 2009. Members have in their packets the minutes from our January 28th, 2009 meeting. I would ask that you look them over and indicate whether there are any corrections to be made. Any corrections? Senator Sieben moves approval of the minutes of the Wednesday, January 28, 2009 hearing. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes are approved. The first bill we have before us is Senate File 275, Senator Frederickson. Senator Frederickson does have an author's amendment, which we will offer on his behalf, but he requested just a moment before we do that to explain his bill, and then the motion will be eventually to move the bill as amended and refer it to the Environment Committee. Senator Frederickson, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, thank you very much, and I have joining us today County Commissioner from Nicollet County, Commissioner Judy Hansen, who will be addressing the committee in a couple minutes. This bill deals with a joint powers board for the Minnesota River watershed to coordinate the cleanup of the Minnesota River. If you'll recall, in 1992, Governor Carlson made as one of his major initiatives cleaning up the Minnesota River to make it fishable and swimmable in 10 years. That was an overly ambitious goal, but it's something which we are still working on. Just as a little point of review, the Minnesota River watershed is over 16,000 square miles. About 14,500 of those square miles are in Minnesota. The remainder are in North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota. It is 18.5% of the land area of Minnesota, and it's 29% of the cultivated acres in Minnesota. It affects all of our parts of 37 counties. When the Minnesota River empties into the Mississippi River, the volume of water in the Mississippi River grows by 49%. After Governor Carlson declared a state policy of cleaning up the Minnesota River, a group of folks in the Minnesota River watershed came together as a county organization of joint powers agreement in 1994 and formed a joint powers agreement to give local input into this cleanup effort. And in 1996, that joint powers agreement to give it more authenticity and support was written into state law. And there was an addition added to it in 1997, and we're back here today to upgrade it again because the mission of the board has changed a little. The situation has changed. And just as a little bit of a review of what has happened since the mid-1990s, I brought along a chart from actually 2002, and each of those dots on the chart is an easement or conservation improvement program in the Minnesota River watershed. You can see that there have been 135,000 acres, as depicted in this chart, as of 2002. That were put into conservation use to improve the water quality in Minnesota River, almost 3,500 easements. About 100,000 of that acres was in the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program. So there's been a lot of work going on in the Minnesota River watershed. It has been coordinated and cajoled by the Minnesota River Board, and that is the board that we are hoping to upgrade the law today. And Madam Chair, I think Commissioner Hansen would like to make a few remarks then, and then we can perhaps go to the amendment.
Welcome to the committee. Commissioner, if you would identify yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you very much. My name is Judy Hansen. I'm a county commissioner in Nicollet County. I also serve as chair of the Minnesota River Board. As Senator Frederickson stated, the Minnesota River Board is a joint powers established in 1995 At that time, there were 37 counties as part of the board, and it was said that it was the largest joint powers organization in the nation. I'm here to ask for your support in revising and updating the legislation that created us. Presently, we have 28 of the 37 counties that have land in the river basin as members of our board. Each member has a delegate and an alternate, and the board meets six times a year. We have excellent attendance, usually 30 or more people. I've been involved since 1996. There's only been one time that we have not made a quorum, and I've been at all of the meetings. We meet at various locations throughout the basin. The purpose of the River Board is stated in Subdivision 1 of the bill, so I won't go over that. The strength of our River Board is our ability to leverage state dollars to bring in federal funds and thereby help accomplish our goals. Some examples of this would be in the late 90s, 100,000 acres in the basin were enrolled in the CREP program with a $1 state to $2.3 federal match. Today, the River Board is managing a $1 million grant through NRCS. This grant will set up the framework for water quality credit trading in the Upper Mississippi River Basin. Some of the other accomplishments of the River Board is early on, we provided leadership among the partners in the basin. Basically, people weren't talking, and we certainly had a big effort in that area. We provided leadership in developing an awareness of the problem of polluted water, trying to emphasize that everyone was part of the problem and everyone needs to be part of the solution. We held educational forums on bacteria, phosphorus, TMDLs, drainage, buffers, septic systems, rock tile inlets, and now latest effort is in the area of what we call controlled drainage. Our plan of work also calls for training sessions, and this has been very helpful to counties who are members because county staff and others can be part of these training sessions at little or no cost. These have included the Shallow Lakes Forum, Fluvial Systems Workshops, and the Conservation Selling Skills. In the area of building partnerships, we feel we've come a long way. First of all, among the counties and their staff, we've been able to apply for grants for some organizations and counties who weren't able to do so on their own. Certainly working with SWCDs, the WMOs, watershed districts, the nonprofits, who have been a very important part of the effort, like CURE and the CCMR. And, of course, the Minnesota University at Mankato, Mankato Water Resources Center. We have a unique partnership with them in that we've shared office space with them since 2003. In 2005, we hired an executive director who has part of his job working for us and part of his job working for the university. Another good partnership was with the a survey that was done. It was called Resident Perceptions of the Basin, and this was working with MPCA, the Friends of the Minnesota Valley. And we did find that 79% of the people surveyed felt that pollution was a problem, and 48% were willing to pay to clean up the pollution. So on behalf of the member counties of the River Board, I thank you for the opportunity to be here, and I'll stand for your questions.
Okay. We do have an author's amendment that I'd like to put on the bill first because it does make some changes that otherwise members may have questions about. So on behalf of Senator Erickson, Senator Vickerman moves the A2 amendment. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senator Frederickson, would you then maybe explain how this amendment then changes your bill to make sure it's in the shape you want it in, or shall I call on council to
Madam
do
Chair,
that?
Madam Chair, I would be pleased to do that, but I think Senate Counsel is prepared
yes,
to do that.
Yes, because it is extensive, so maybe we'll ask Mr. Bodern. Mr. Bodern, if you would explain the A2 amendment that we just adopted.
Madam Chair, if you look on the amendment, basically lines 2 through 15 of the amendment make stylistic and grammatical changes, just cleaning up the way the some of the language is laid out, for example, in lines 10 through 14. If you look on lines 16 and 17 of the amendment, this clarifies that the existing procedure for the board is that the individual counties appoint delegates and alternates to the Minnesota River Board, and those delegates serve at the pleasure of the board that appointed them, thus clarifying what their terms are. Then, if you look on lines 18 and 19, that's the first of several changes that would affect the, when you look on page 3 of the bill, it creates a what it calls an advisory board in the original language. That seemed a little confusing to have an advisory board serving the board, so this simply renames it or provides the name of the, puts it back as an advisory committee and clarifies how that would operate. Lines 20 through 23 of the amendment deal with the terms for members of the advisory committee. It provides 3-year terms. Members serve until the end of the terms or a successor is appointed. And those, by the way, the bill provides
who,
that the
who appoints them?
The on line page 3, line 8 of the bill, the chair of the board, the Minnesota River Board, appoints the members of that committee.
And how large a committee is it?
Madam Chair, the membership is not limited. If you continue.
So, Senator Frederickson, what's the intent there?
Well, Madam Chair, when this Joint Powers Board was formed, there was a lot of concern of people in the basin that want to be involved with this board. And so the predecessor to this advisory committee was formed. And its intent is to have individuals from a large, diverse group have an input into what this board does, and it's through this committee. So we purposely did not put a limit on it. If people are interested,
or even designate what types of people you're looking for. So it's just a broad citizen group.
It's just a broad citizen group because there are a lot of stakeholders that wanted to be involved in this process, and this is the way that they are involved.
And it's the board itself that does the appointing rather than the county boards.
Madam Chair, that's right. As this bill now reads, it's the chair of the Minnesota River Board.
Okay, Mr. Bodern.
And Madam Chair, just to clarify, in the bill, the page 3, lines 14 through 17 do specify particular types of representatives that the chair of the Minnesota River Board could appoint. For example, people from county water planning entities, county environmental
but
services.
But they're not mandated. That's what I was just trying to make sure.
Madam Chair, that's right. They're not mandated.
Okay.
The remaining item, there are two remaining items in the amendment. Lines 27 and 28 just clarify the board provides the advisory committee with staff support, and lines 30 through 35 provide the procedure for the first meeting of the newly restructured advisory committee and a requirement that it select officers and a chair.
Okay. Are there questions for Senator Frederickson or Commissioner Hansen? Senator Roebling?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am wondering, with the establishment of the advisory committee, have some staff and meeting facilities, is it going to add new expenses to the operation of the board?
Senator Roebling, this is a continuation of a committee that already exists, so I don't think it would add additional expenses, but I'll let Commissioner Hansen respond to that.
Commissioner Hansen?
The way the committee has been dormant for some time, it was very active at the early on in our history. The way that it was run at that time, various counties did more in-kind work on that, keeping minutes and those kinds of things.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling?
It said that the joint powers agreement, that upon acceptance of the joint powers agreement and payment of annual dues, each member county shall have one county commissioner. Is that how you're basically funded, is through dues that the participating counties pay?
Senator Fredrickson or Commissioner Hansen?
We do have approximately $44,000 in dues that come from the member counties, and we also have baseline funding through Bowser.
Madam Chair, just a little more background. Our state budget has fluctuated up and down, there was a period where there was no state participation in this board, which was what was an item of contention for the county boards, because this board was formed as a partnership between the city and the state, and they felt when they were zeroed out in our state budget that the state was backing away from our commitment to them. So they do receive a small. Fortunately, they still receive a small appropriation. I don't know how that's going to survive in the current budget crises, but the counties do like to see some amount of state support since it is a partnership.
Just one more question.
Senator Roebling.
You often hear about these multiple layers of organizations that oversee water management and that there's really a lot of them. And I know there are really a lot of them. And I see that one of the tasks of this group is to try and coordinate them somewhat. Do you have any statutory authority to do that? I mean, other than an attempt to do it? Or there's no veto authority you have over any other watershed district or program that is working on improving water quality? I'm just, because I hear that complaint all the time, and that we have too many layers of it, and that we probably have so many permits when somebody wants to do something that involves water that it almost puts people out of their minds trying to figure out where they all have to go and where they all have to get permits from. How do you fit into that whole big picture?
Senator Fredrickson or Commissioner Hansen?
We have no regulatory authority or an enforcement authority, and so basically we do what the statute says. We try to coordinate efforts, and we do that by showing, you know, the counties what their benefits can be to be a part of our organization and to look at things on a holistic perspective rather than to look at themselves each as an individual county, because you know, the water that goes under the bridge where my daughter used to live in Wilmer ends up going under the bridge in St. Peter, Minnesota, where I live. And people need to understand that, and that's kind of the effort that we've made.
Yeah. Senator Vickerman, did you have a question or comment?
Well, when we get to the time, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the bill.
Sure.
I'm a co-author, and I know all about the Minnesota.
Yes, I will call on you to do that. Are there other questions or comments for Senator Fredrickson or Commissioner Hansen? Then Senator Vickerman moves that Senate File 275 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on the Environment. Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to speak about this bill? Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails.
Madam Chair,
thank
members,
you
thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Senator Olsen brings us Senate File 234.
Madam Chair, members, I'm pleased to be before you on Senate File 234, which is on transfer development rights, and I have some local testifiers who are very well versed in the area, but I'd like to just briefly get a little overview of this. When I was a county commissioner in Chisago County, we were looking at redoing our comprehensive plan, and the issue of TDRs and transfer development rights and credits was a big part of the plan, and there was a number of restrictions developed. But as time went on and the comprehensive plan moved forward, it became clear that this was a way to preserve open space in our growing county and yet direct growth into a more confined area through clusters and or other kinds of growth tools. So I have with me Dave Whitney, who is on the Planning Commission in Chisago County, just recently appointed, but he has been involved in this issue for many years now. And then Tom O'Meara, who has also been involved, and they will speak more directly to the bill.
Mr. Whitney, welcome to the committee, and we're pleased to have your testimony. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Madam Chair, my name is Dave Whitney from Chisago County. I appreciate the opportunity of saying a few words regarding the transfer development credits. Once the home market starts to pick up, the use of transfer development credits is an incredible land management tool for growing communities, especially surrounding the Twin City areas. There are five major benefits of an effective transfer development program. The first one is preserves open space. And everyone likes to say and likes to hear open space, and TDCs are a great way to preserve open space. The second thing, it allows a higher density of development in certain desirable areas within a community. So you can pick the areas where you want higher density. The third, it provides landowners and or farmers the opportunity of generating revenue on their property without actually selling their property. The fourth is it allows developers a higher density within a development, which gives them lower costs of development. The fifth, it gives conservation groups the ability to purchase TDCs on property that they feel is a high preservation area at a price far less than what they would have to pay if they were actually buying the land outright. These are really, really important benefits of an effective TDC program. But to make a TDC program work, you need two other ingredients. The first one is you have to have ordinances that provide for clustering of housing and also give incentives for open space design. The second, and that's what we're addressing today, is you must have a TDC bank that is a workable bank that allows people who are willing to sell their TDCs to get in contact with those who want to buy their TDCs and to make the whole transaction work. This bill will allow and expands the ability for a community to determine whether it would be a nonprofit transfer development bank or it could be a profit-oriented, profit-centered TDC bank. Those are really important for a community to decide which one will meet their needs. So with that, I'll turn it over to Tom, who will make a few comments. And then if there are any questions about the TDC program or any interest, Tom and I would try to answer, along with Senator Olsen, any questions you would have. Thank you.
Mr. O'Meara, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tom O'Meara. I live in Chisago County. First, I'd like to thank Madam Chair for helping me to find Senator Olsen today.
We've met earlier today.
We did, yeah, in the hall. I said, where is he?
Right.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Certainly.
Since 2004, a coalition of landowners and conservationists has been gathering in Chisago County to discuss how we can handle growth at the same time preserve our rural feel. We want to preserve the best of Chisago County for our children and grandchildren without hampering growth. Smart growth has been our goal. We do not want to turn our county into another urban area. We want to continue to be a magnet for tourists seeking a rural environment close to the cities. You see, day trippers are a substantial economic force in our community. In the past 4 years, we have come to agree that a sensible land use in rural areas like Chisago County require two things. One, we need a well-run transfer development credit bank. Two, we need targeted incentives for open space design developments. I'm in the development business. These are really critical. People will pay additional 10% for an open space design property. With these tools, we can handle growth and preserve the rural character that is important to our farmers, our homeowners, our hunters, and our fishermen. The bill under consideration will allow, very importantly, a private company to create a transfer development credit bank. This will create a more transparent marketplace for the buying and selling of transfer development credits by folks owning more than 20 acres in Chisago County and developers. This bill allows banks, nonprofits, and others to buy, hold, and sell transfer development credits. It lets landowners get paid for keeping land open and productive while letting communities better manage density of new home communities. By broadening the definition of a transfer development bank to include, quote, for-profit ownership, this bill gives communities more choices, and it gives developers a useful tool for increasing returns on their land investments. Madam Chair and members of the committee, this bill is a win-win for landowners, conservationists, and new home developers. It helps to create a powerful resource for sensible land use in communities like Chisago County. It allows us to handle growth, preserve our natural wonders, and preserve open space in a very cost-effective way. I urge you to pass this bill along. Thank you.
Senator Olstein, what's been the practice in the past, and why do we need to do this particular change now?
Madam Chair, members, the practice in the past had been, I think as the testifiers alluded to, it's kind of a new tool in developing of a county's planning ordinances, because in the past, well, when this was set up, it was set up quite a few years ago, but it was via school districts, and that's really the only constraint within there currently. You can transfer land, you know, within that school district in the townships. There's the bill also addresses for cities, too, to have TDR rights within their city. But what's driving this is, I think as alluded to, is having this either a nonprofit or a profitable organization that can be the kind of the broker for the farmer to come and say, I've got, you know, 80 acres of TDR credits I'd like to sell. And I guess one thing that's really driving it, for me, there was a couple of these transactions when I was a county commissioner, and they only sold for like $800. And that was a red flag, because those landowners sold those land rights for way less than they were worth. Because now they sold TDR credits for $800, and then a developer picked them up and was able to double the size of his development for a very low cost. So I think a nonprofit group or a separate entity would be able to work with both the sellers and the buyers of the credits to get a fairer market price, because it truly is giving the developer a much more profitable development, at the same time preserving open space.
So it's not circumventing the market?
No.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So right now, does the developer go out and find his own exchanges? And you're saying that there should be a broker in between, like a nonprofit or a commercial bank. And how would they be compensated for their brokerage fees or whatever?
Senator Olstein.
Mr. O'Meara would like to address the last question briefly, if he could.
Mr. O'Meara.
What I wanted to say was that at the moment, there is no transparency in the transaction. Nobody knows what these transfer development credits are worth. In residential real estate, we have the MLS. And you can see immediately comparative values. Mm. What we're hoping with the Transfer Development Credit Bank is to create more transparency so everyone who wants to invest can see exactly what things are worth. This is a major issue for landowners, farmers, families who have to make a decision to take the land out of production virtually forever with a conservation easement. So it's a major financial decision. And there is no way, no transparency in this process. This bill, by establishing a private company or a not-for-profit company to handle these things, will create that kind of transparency and establish a better market for everybody. That's the point, I think.
Madam Chair,
Senator Olstein first.
Mm-hmm. To your question, I suspect it would be set up as a percentage of the overall transaction, because if we were looking at institutions like the Trust for Public Lands or the Minnesota Land Trust as probably a nonprofit entity that would be interested in pursuing that, I better say I don't have the answer for that. But I suspect
they would not go uncompensated. It would be they would make a contract.
Yes.
For it.
And Madam Chair, so we're assuming that the person, who pays the amount, the person selling their development rights would be paying the person who was assisting them in the sale of those development rights. Is that what you're thinking would probably happen?
Like a realtor.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they could, maybe they, just like with realtors, you could decide to split the realty fee. You could have the buyer paying a portion of it, or, I mean, that would be part of the negotiations of the contract, what kind of fees were paid and who paid them, I would think, rather than prescribing it in law.
And Madam Chair, is the county envisioning that there would be one organization or one bank designated, or would the market also determine how many would do that? We're just giving authority to them to do it, so it could be like multiple real estate companies might get into it? Or what are you envisioning?
Senator Rolstein.
I'm Chair Senator Roebling. One thing I know for sure is the counties do not want to be involved. Right now they have kind of a board where if you're interested in selling, you can list the credits you want to sell and people who are interested in buying, but they do not want to be involved in a financial transaction. You know, their goal is to oversee all this stuff in the regulation. And so, but I would suspect the ideal situation for me would be somebody like Minnesota Land Trust would step up and do it for the whole county, for the cities, and for in the townships. But that isn't necessarily how it will play out. It could play out just as you described.
Senator Lori.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Olsen, I'm wondering, does in this, in your vision here, does the county board or the local unit that's setting this up retain some control over this? Do they put some parameters into the local ordinance that establishes this mechanism? I mean, you know, oversight of something like this would be kind of important, I would think. And
well,
Senator Olsen.
Madam Chair, Senator Lori, the language of the bill does not require that. And that's an interesting comment because I almost think that there's a free market portion of this, and my testifiers would probably be better to address that.
Gentlemen, either one have a comment to or response to Senator Lori's question?
I suspect that the county would want to know what was going on with land use in its county within its confines. The zoning department, I suspect, would keep an eye on all of this. But certainly, when a transfer development credit was sold, a conservation easement would be assigned to that property, and that would be registered and listed with the county. And so there would be no way for someone to, for example, sell them three times or to that kind of shenanigans. I think the main thing here is that the marketplace will determine whether or not there's one, two, or three providers of a transfer development bank. Probably there's only going to be one. There probably isn't enough money within one particular county to make it like a real estate company with multiple providers. I don't know, but I'm quite sure that the way the bill is constructed, these transfer development credits will be kept, and there will be integrity in the process of selling and registering, maintaining a record about what they sold for. Think so, Dave?
Mr. Whitney?
The comprehensive plan currently has the county has the right to establish a bank. So from that point of view, and to assign it to someone if it's allowed to do that. So I don't know if that answers your question, but they are monitoring the situation. They have the authority to look into the establishment of a transfer development bank. Now, does that answer your question, or?
Senator Lori.
Madam Chair, I'm just trying to envision this ordinance that would set this up, and there doesn't seem to be any specificity about how that would be done. So I'm just having trouble, you know, getting that in my head, how it would all
well, like the number of TDCs
to make it actually work.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I'm not used to
it's okay, Mr. Whitney.
Just whack me when if I get too enthusiastic.
That's okay.
I love TDCs. It's a great marketing tool, and I mean, it's a wonderful thing, and I don't benefit myself at all. I mean, other than I have a little land maybe sometime in the future, but it is a great tool, and Chisago is one of the leaders in trying the TDC program. So if you have communities, by the way, that are interested, I think we have quite a bit of experience with the TDC program. Now back to the TDCs. The ordinance itself establishes, like, how many you're eligible for to sell, and that's determined by the ordinance itself. So if I have an 80 acres, it clearly tells me how many I can sell. And I can sell part of those. I can sell all of them. I can sell one if I want to. And that's put on the deed of the property that's going to be transferred. And you have to transfer them to someone. So if Senator Olsen bought them, then he would have on his property the right to take four TDCs onto his property if he's doing a development there. So all that kind of thing is approved by the Planning Commission and the board within the county. So I don't see that as being a real problem myself, because the ordinance has clearly defined those goals.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm trying to understand, though, now if I have land to sell, or to sell development rights to, but it's being farmed now, and then I can do this, and so the open spaces aren't particularly guaranteed in any particular place or order. For land planning purposes, is that okay? I mean, so maybe it's all clustered on one end of the county, and then an area that's going to be heavily developed ends up with very little open space. Is there any, how would you regulate that?
Senator Olsen?
Madam Chair and Senator Roebling, for instance, in Chisago County, and this is for any county in the state, this isn't a county-specific bill we're requesting here, we had the Green Corridor, which was established by the county along the St. Croix River, is kind of land that they wanted to target to preserve. And originally with transfer development credits, that was the sending area, and then closer to some of the cities was the receiving area. But as Mr. Whitney can address, the current comprehensive plan it's shrunken the Green Corridor, and it doesn't have that requirement. The only requirement is that it has to be within the school district. You can't send development credits down to another school district, with the thought being you could, you know, overload a school district with kids from these development credits. So that's kind of how it has developed to the point it has. And as far as growth going towards one end of the county, that's certainly a possibility, but it could also be a transfer to a farm that's adjacent too. So, but what it does is it preserves that land where the credits are sold will then stay as open land.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
When we talk about open land, does the landowner retain the right to farm it, or does it have to go into conservation land? They can farm it?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, they can continue to farm it.
Senator Lurie.
Madam Chair, Senator Olsen, I'm curious, when somebody sells their development credits, do they see a reduction in their property value that's reflected, and they have some savings in property taxes in future years as well? Is that
Senator Olsen?
Madam Chair, Senator Lurie, that's a good point, because they've taken away some of the value of the land because now it can't be sold for development. And so I suspect we've had probably only a handful of TDRs on parcels. You know, there are more TDRs than that, but it was probably, I think there's probably under 10 parcels that have actually sold a number of credits. And I have not, we've had those discussions, and I wonder if one of my testifiers might have a better answer than that.
From the one piece that I'm familiar with, Madam Chair, mm-hmm. It didn't. They resold the property, actually, with the transfer development credits excluded, and the property sold for approximately the same price that it would have if it had them on there, because the people that bought them wanted the open space design. They had horses and other things, and they wanted to leave it open and weren't as much affected by, you know, they didn't really care. Now, whether that would happen hundreds of times, I think we don't know for sure. But the fact is now you're moving home from one area to another area, so you're just moving the tax structure, in a sense, to another area. So you're not removing it, and you still have this land over here that you are generating income off of.
Madam Chair,
Senator,
they could probably stay in Green Acres. I know that. I did want to mention that I've spoke with folks from AMC, LMC, and the Association of Townships, and they thought that this was okay. And I also emailed the bill to our county zoning administrator, and she responded with an email that she thought she was supportive of these changes.
Madam Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair, where does the bill go if it gets
the bill goes to the floor. Are there further questions?
Madam
comments?
Chair, if we want to change it, we're going to have to do it in this committee or wait till
beg pardon?
Say if we...
If you want to amend the bill, it should be done in this committee. Senator Vickerman, did you have...
No, Madam Chair, I'm not doing that, but I got that Green Acres in my mind, and we're going to work on that tomorrow. So
right.
I was just trying to kind of stall
this
it.
This is not like Green Acres.
No. I shouldn't have said that.
You should not have said that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
And I keep thinking about who's going to be the broker, because that's really what this is about, because we apparently already... have available the transfer of development credits is set in statute already. But I think it's probably a good idea that we don't specify a specific institution or bank or nonprofit, because then they would have the lock on the percent that they would charge to broker this. If we leave it to the market, I would think it would be much more competitive. And, you know, the percent, the brokerage fee would maybe be 5%, or, you know, just like the realtors have to, although sometimes there was a very common 7%, but other realtors kind of broke that mold after a while, and you can get 5% or 4.5%. So, I just want to make sure we don't give this to somebody who can abuse it.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, the names I threw out were just some possibilities. The bill does not, it just specifies a nonprofit in the criteria that they have to be under. There's some kind of a tax level that they have to be. So it doesn't specify who the nonprofit would be or a commercial entity either.
Are there further questions? I need a motion here.
I can make it.
Oh, of course. I'm sorry. I had that marked, too. Senator Olsen then moves that Senate File 234 be recommended to pass. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, members, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your work on that. I'm still not.
Yeah, I'm not sure about this. I should ask Chris about this.
Senator Rust. Take up Senate File 91, the searchable database.
Searchable 91s, okay.
Unless you have a preference for...
No, I don't care. I think this is the one that I have...
one-word amendment.
Senate File 91?
Yes.
One word.
Not sure what I did with it. Do you know where that amendment is?
It says with amendment.
I'm going to try and find it. What Senate File 91 deals with is establishing a website for the Department of Finance and Administration, et cetera, with a searchable database of state expenditures. And there was one suggestion that I don't know where I will find it. It's just adding a word, AIDS payments, to make sure that we're understanding sure. What is going on. And Ms. Schaefer-Pellin is going to find it for me. So what the bill does is to require the Commissioner of Finance to maintain a website that has a searchable database with information on state contracts, state appropriations, state expenditures, and state tax expenditures. We previously had the Commissioner of Administration setting up a website for a searchable database on state contracts. One of the things that we're, I think, all moving toward, both in the state agencies and in the legislature, is this whole notion of transparency in state government and the ability for interested parties in the public to be able to find information quickly and reliably and accurately about the business of state government. Those of us on the state government finance division have heard reports from the Commissioner of Finance about the progress that they are making in this regard with a searchable database. But what this bill does is to support that effort, for one thing, like we have done previously in supporting the efforts of the OET as they were moving forward with being the overseer of technology investments by state agencies and legislation that we had supported them in terms of the authority that was given to them. And the same thing actually is being done here, where we require specifics that be in that database so that the Commissioner of Finance, MMB, will know what it is that the legislature believes is appropriate information for contracts and appropriations, expenditures, tax expenditures, and also retention of the data. It is, and then we also in the sub 7 of the bill require the commissioner to consult with the chairs of the appropriate committees before encumbering funds that are appropriated on after or at the beginning of the next biennium for state accounting or procurement systems. The commissioner and his deputies and assistants have been very supportive of this effort, which pleases me a lot. And we know that other states are moving toward this as well, and we do have the technology to make this information available. And again, it leads to transparency, accountability, and I hope that we can act favorably on it. The one-word amendment that I have is on page 2, line 2.8, after include, insert aid, or AIDS. I'm not sure if it should be aid payments or AIDS payments, Mr. Bodern.
Madam Chair, I'm not familiar with that particular item of finance. I guess I'd say aid sounds correct
okay.
to me.
aid, then insert aid after include. Mr. Chairman, I would make that motion to amend at line 2.8.
So the amendment is on line 2.8, after the word include, add the word aid.
Insert aid.
Mm-hmm. Everyone understand the amendment? It's an author's amendment. All those in favor, aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman and members, I've been working with Representative Winkler and also, again, the commissioner's office and find them in support of this concept and moving forward. And the people from the MMB office are here to answer any questions about where they are currently and how this legislation may help them move forward, if you need to hear them.
Do any members have any questions of Senator Rust or members of MMB?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that Mr. Neumeister had a comment, and the bill, when it is moved, will go to the Judiciary Committee.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Neumeister.
Mr. Chairman,
for the record.
Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rich Neumeister. I'd just like to share four items. One is, this is a positive thing, transparency, openness, and all that. And so I remember you worked on something like this last year. Number two, though, one of the things that's important, and whether or not you do that in legislation here as it goes through, is to make sure that it's readable, it's user-friendly, and it's understandable for the citizens like you and I who want to be able to use it to find out where's money being spent. A lot of times when things are put up on the websites, they don't have those things in mind, particularly when government folks do things or the IT-type people. So I think there needs to be some type of goal about that or how that might be done legislatively or whatever, or in the report that is sent in consultation. Number two, who? So when I go view a certain agency and I see, oh, this money's here, there, dot, 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 who can I then contact? And it doesn't say that there should be any contact information. That may change, but at least something there to where the treasurer's, you know, or whoever's head of the money or whatever. But another item that to me is so important, and particularly I spent about a half hour in Senator Betzolt's committee today, is the whole issue of audits. And one of the things that I would like to add or suggest that you add on here is on page one, and this is just a concept of it, on line 11, after tax expenditures, put an state internal audits for that particular entity or agency that they are going through. So at least would be the concept for me is that if a public person, a citizen, wanted to know what audits are being done about that money, it could be listed under that agency. So the agency would have to report to whoever is going to put up this website in the next year or whatever we're doing audits, blah, 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 on how this money is going. So that, to paraphrase President Obama and Louis Brandeis, sunshine is the best disinfectant. So somehow, some way, if that could be worked out and to where you also you have a new subdivision to where it says something, the website must include any state financial audits that are being done by the agency itself, how to see how the money is being spent or with that particular agency or that particular grant. And so at least the public can get an idea what audits are being done, because it's very hard even now to see. I can go to the legislative auditor, and I can see all the time what audits are doing. So I know as a citizen, hey, in 6 months, I can find out. It's very hard for in state agencies. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, those are my comments and points. And thank you very much for the few moments of your time.
Thank you, Mr. Neumeister. Any questions?
Chairman, I think
Senator Rust.
Mr. Neumeister makes a good point. And I'm trying to find a place where it would be appropriate to insert either information to audits done by the agency, internal audits done by the agency, and or a reference to providing a field with a reference to the legislative auditor's office that have conducted either internal control audits or financial audits. And I'm not I'm not sure where that would be appropriate. I don't know where to put it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a bad idea, however. Mr. Bodern, do you have any suggestions?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rest,
that's not too lengthy. Otherwise, we'll lay the bill over.
I think it would take a little work if you're going to follow the structure that's used in the bill. Subdivision 1 sort of is a list of all of the searchable databases the bill requires, and then each database gets its own separate subdivision. It might not be extraordinarily lengthy, but it would need a new subdivision.
Mr. Chairman, I really do think it's a good idea. I'd like to be able to talk to MMB and the OLA, and so I request that the bill be laid over and we can bring it back up on another date and have that language in there, because I don't. That issue is not really appropriate for the Judiciary Committee. It should be
right.
done in this
agreed, and maybe
in this
also.
Committee. And the only point of contention I have, Mr. Neumeister, wherever you are, is why you didn't come to me earlier. Okay. But so, Mr.
Senate
Chairman, if you lay the bill
91
over.
Is laid over.
Thank you. Let's see if I do better with
Senate File 107.
Senate File 107. Thank you. We've had a lot of discussion in the Legislative Audit Commission and in the today in state government finance reports from the legislative auditor about those occasions when we find that there is misuse of public funds. And what this bill does is to, first of all, put a burden on the legislative auditor to make sure that reports on employees who use public funds for a purpose other than what they were intended or appropriated, that be disclosed. So it's kind of broadening the duty of the legislative auditor in that regard. And then secondly, in Section 2, it then talks about people who intentionally use money for a purpose other than what it is intended, and that we also not only have that in the administrative statutes, but that we move it into the criminal statutes, that employees that misuse public funds may be charged with a gross misdemeanor, which is another reason why this bill also needs to go to the Judiciary Committee. There are sections in the law that require or that talk about misconduct of public officials and provide criminal sanctions, but this one is not one of them. In 16A-139, which is the second section of the bill, it specifies that it's illegal for public officials to spend those dollars other than for purposes other than which it was appropriated, but it does not create a criminal or other sanction for such a misappropriation. And what this bill does is to put that, it's just to add that into the statute, into the criminal statute. And a person who does investigations for the MMB is here to respond to any questions as well, but they have no difficulty with moving forward on this bill either.
Senator Alcine.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Senator Rest, we heard earlier today from the legislative auditor about where the group of employees was using these cash cards just like they were their money. Now, would that fall under your type of bill, or would, because they were writing an IOU and evidently paying them back, but it still seems like it was inappropriate use of state
state funds.
If they are misappropriating public funds and using public funds for a purpose other than what it was appropriated, the legislative auditor could recommend that a charge be filed against people. And in the State Government Finance Committee, we've talked a lot about we're trying to do things on the front end and not always on the back end. And this is a back end. This is still a back end motion. But the sanction right now is just an administrative one. You can lose your job over it, but there's nothing further that is directly stated in our laws that further action can be taken against you. So this is another tool just to remind employees up front that if they are using money inappropriately, public monies inappropriately, that it's not only can cost them their jobs, but it can take them to court.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair?
Senator?
Stephen, thank you.
Yep.
Senator Ress, could you explain what the rationale for having the charge be a gross misdemeanor is? It would seem that I understand that it might be the first time then that you're adding a criminal factor to this, but it would seem that if there was a very large problem or incident with taxpayer money that was not used appropriately, it possibly should be up to the discretion of the auditor in consultation with the state attorney general to even be eligible for felony charges. I'm wondering if you what you're thinking behind that was.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if I could ask either somebody from MMB or the legislative auditor, or maybe both, to discuss the level at which a crime has to exist before it reaches a gross misdemeanor and then or a felony. I think it has to do with the amount of dollars that are involved as well as anything else. But Mr. Nobles, if you'd be responsive to Senator Stevens' question.
Mr. Nobles, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor. And there still would be that discretion, Senator Stevens, for a county attorney or the U.S. attorney if federal money were involved. There are other statutes that could be brought into play. In fact, I would note that one of the most recent unfortunate thefts of public money, which occurred at the Department of Human Services, because it was in part federal money, the U.S. attorney was involved, and they did bring theft charges, felony charges, which brought with it considerable both time in jail, in prison, and restitution of money as well. So I think this simply adds a criminal element. If you can't reach the theft, which would be a felony charge threshold, then you have something else to use.
Thank you.
And also in the third section, the best practices for investigations, the Finance Department, the MMB, has also, as I understand it, checked with the Attorney General's office, and they are both in agreement on this, that this legislation, that this language in Section 3 with regard to best practices of investigations and the involvement of the Attorney General is appropriate.
Any other questions?
So, Mr. Chairman, then I would move that Senate File 107 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Judiciary.
Okay, we have Senator Rust's motion in front of us. Anyone else from the audience care to testify either in favor or in opposition? Senator Rust moves Senate File 107 be recommended to pass and referred to Judiciary. All in favor of that motion, aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And there being no further business,
there being no further business before the committee, this committee stands adjourned.